Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuf Mem Dalid. Today's daf has been dedicated in honor of Joe and Norma Asa. Shem Yarichim Ehem Batobu Shnotam B'Ne'aimim by the Asa family. Today's daf is being studied Le'ailun Nishmat Hacham Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam and Abraham Ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichem Began Eden. Amen. We begin on Kuf Mem Gimal Amud Bet, and we're somewhat away up. We are at the Savada Bihuda. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, about 10 lines from the bottom of the daf. Just let's review where we got until this point. We are discussing the subject of Sehita. We had a machloket in the Mishnah between Hachamim and Rabbi Yehuda regarding perot, that the juice oozed on its own on Shabbat. Are you allowed to use that juice or not? Hachamim said no. Gezerah, that you might come to squeeze the fruits directly, and squeezing Sehita is a problem. It's a toldah of dash. Okay, dash, we said, is threshing. So just like threshing, you're taking the wheat out of the chaff, so you're taking the juice out of the fruit. So it's similarly extracting something from a husk. So therefore, the same thing by Sehita. Whereas the Bihuda in the Mishnah was more lenient. He made a hiluk. He said it depends what you bought it for. If you bought the fruit for achila purposes, so then already we're not going to make a gezerah that you might come to squeeze, because your whole purpose that you bought it for was for eating purposes. Whereas if you bought it for mashkim purposes, if that was your intent, so therefore when it oozes on Shabbat, there's a gezerah that you might come to do it directly. So the Bihuda made a hiluk. So the Gemara came along and tried to define this machloket, and the Gemara came out as follows. They were not arguing by Zetim and Anavim. Zetim and Anavim is olives and grapes. Everybody assumes, even in the Bihuda, that Zetim and Anavim, the assumption is that it's for what? For shtiya, for the drink, for the mashkeh, for the oil that comes out, for the wine that comes out. And therefore, no matter what purpose you buy the Zetim and Anavim, the juice that oozes out, no machlok, according to everybody, juice is asud. No mahlokat. And for that matter, there is no mahlokat by sh'ar perot. By all other fruit, there is no mahlokat, meaning everybody's going to say it depends what you bought it for. If you bought it for achila, no problem. If you bought it for the mashkin, it is a problem. Everybody agrees to that. So where is the mahlokat of the Bihuda and Hachamim? So the mahlokat is by tutin v'rimonim. Tutin v'rimonim means tutin would be berries, and rimonim would be pomegranates. Hachamim have a strict opinion by tutin v'rimonim, and they come along and say that it's always going to be asur. They put tutin and rimonim in the category of zetim and anavim. Whereas the Bihuda says no. Tutim v'rimonim, if you bought it for achila, mutar. If you bought it for mashke, asur. And then he comes along and says one more point, the Bihuda, which is the subject of today's Gemara. And even if, let's say, you took the tutim v'rimonim setam, meaning you didn't specify what your purpose for taking it is, it's a blanket intention over here, Rabbi Yehuda still says that's as if you took it for mashkin, and therefore it's going to be asur. So tutim v'rimonim, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is only asur in two cases. Setam, and clearly where you took it for mashkin. Our Gemara now is going to challenge that. Are you going to tell me that Rabbi Yehuda holds that setam, that when you take something with a blanket intention, that should make it asur? Is that possible to say in Rabbi Yehuda? Now the Gemara is giving a long, drawn-out proof or question in order to challenge that. Now, to set up the question, we need a hakdamah. something that we should know already, in the laws of Haksharat Tum'ah. What is Haksharat Tum'ah? The Torah tells us that in order for a sheretz, for example, to metameh something, for example, a fruit, that fruit needs to be prepared for Tum'ah first. How does a fruit become prepared? It needed to become wet. And then if the sheretz touches it, it can become tameh. There are seven liquids that prepare fruits for Tum'ah. Those liquids are the Shetevot, Yad, Shahat, Dam. For our purposes, all we have to know now is Halav, milk is one of the seven liquids. Now there are different types of milk. There's the milk of an Isha, it's Halav Isha, it's the breast milk, and then you have Halav Behema, the milk that comes out of the animal. So there's going to be a discussion over here now that we all agree that milk is one of the Zayin Mashkim. However, there's a subject here that the milk, in order to be Makshir, it has to come out from, let's say, the person willingly. Everybody agrees if it comes out willingly, she, let's say the lady is nursing, and she wants the milk to come out, so everybody agrees that such a type of Hakshara, it came out willingly and it went on the peri. Nobody argues on that case, for sure it has the ability to be makshir. The subject is going to be, what if it comes out shelo liratzon? Does such milk have the ability to be makshir shelo liratzon when it's not willingly? Now of course the Gemara will explain why should we make a difference between ratzon and eno ratzon. But that's exactly where we're going to start. And then eventually we're going to come back to the question by Rabbi Yehuda. So let's begin. V'savar Rabbi Yehuda setam asur. Does Rabbi Yehuda hold that a setam kavana by tutim v'nimunim is going to make the mashkim that come out of it asur? V'atenan, we learned in the Mishnah, halav ha'isha, the milk that comes out of a lady, metameh. Metameh means makshir, meaning it has the ability to prepare a fruit, for example, by wetting it for tum'ah, leratzon v'shelo leratzon, which means whether it comes out willingly or even if it's not willingly. Rashi tells us, how do we know that milk is considered a mashke? How do we know it's one of the Zayin mashkim? So he quotes us a pasuk in Sefer Shofetim. The pasuk says, "V'teftach etno da halav v'tashkehu." That pasuk was by Ya'el when she gave the enemy of the Jews, Sisera, milk to drink. So the pasuk says she gave him milk, but tashkehu. So you see that milk is considered a mashke. And therefore, if it's considered a mashke, I don't care if it came out willingly or not willingly, a mashke is a mashke, it has the ability to makshir. Mishnah continues. Halav bema. But the milk that comes out of an animal, eno metameh ela liratzon. When it comes to the milk of an animal, it only has the ability to metameh when it comes out of the animal willingly. Now the Gemara, of course, is going to have to explain why is that so. That's the opinion of Tana Kama. Amar Rabbi Akiva kal vachomeru. Rabbi Akiva comes along and says, no, I don't agree with you. I say that halav behema should be metameh leratzon and also enoratzon. And he's going to make a kal vachomer. And his kal vachomer is going to be like this. What is considered more of a drink, more of a mashke? Halav behema is going to be considered more of a mashke. Why? Halav isha, who drinks halav isha? Only ketanim, only small children. Whereas halav behema, everybody drinks halav behema. Small children, as well as adults, as well as gedolim. So therefore, if halav isha, that's not so drinkable, and still you're telling me it's a mashke, that's metameh liratzon, and shelo liratzon, halav behema, which is more of a mashke, because everybody drinks it, kal vachomer, it should be metameh ben liratzon, ben shelo liratzon. So let's read that inside. Amar bi'akiva kal vachomeru, uma halav isha. She'enu miyuhad ela leketanim. And what? Chalavisha, that's only designated for small children. Metameh leratzon v'shelo leratzon. And still it's metameh, meaning it's makshir. Willingly or not willingly, when it comes out of the lady, halava behema. Shemiyuhad ben leketanim, ben legedolim. Enodin shiyetameh ben leratzon or ben shelo leratzon. Halav behema, which is more of a mashkin in the sense that everybody drinks it, although more so it should have tum'ah ben l'ratzon ben shelo l'ratzon. So that's Rabbi Akiva's contention. Amru lo. So the rabbis now come back. Now, what the rabbis are going to say over here is as follows. That halav isha, we are going to compare halav isha to the law of dam. Now we know dam also is one of the seven liquids that has the ability to metameh. Now there's a pasuk in the Torah that says, "Vedam halalim tishteh." So you see over here that dam is considered a mashkin. And the Torah goes on to say, what type of dam? Dam halalim. What does dam halalim mean? Chas v'shalom, let's say somebody gets killed. The blood that comes out of them is called dam halalim, the blood of a dead body. That blood, the Torah tells us, has the ability to be makshir ochlim. Now, that's if you totally kill a person. But there's a sevara that says, mali katla kula, mali katla palga. If you kill a person fully, okay, but what about if you give him a wound? That's killing him partially. So therefore, that blood also that comes out, if somebody, let's say, was stabbed, and now there's blood coming out, that's all considered, also considered dam halalim, and has the ability to metameh, meaning makshir. Now, let's analyze. When somebody has blood of a wound coming out of him, that's obviously shelo l'ratzon. Right? Nobody wants to bleed to death. And still, the Torah is telling us that dam halalim, even though it's shelo l'ratzon, still has the ability to be makshir. Good, but what's it got to do with the milk? The Gemara Nida tells us, dam ne'ekar v'na'aseh halav. The mother's milk actually comes from the blood. We know a lady, when she's nursing, she does not have the blood of Nida. Why doesn't she have the blood of Nida? Because the Gemara says that blood of Nida turns into the milk. And therefore we see a connection between dam and halav. And we say, just like dam is metameh ben leratzon, ben shelo leratzon, so to halav isha will be tameh ben leratzon, ben shelo leratzon. Hakamim are going to equate the law of dam and the law of halav. However, by an animal, there is no deen of dam halal. Meaning, the blood that comes out of an animal when you wound it, that blood does not have the ability to be makshir. And therefore, we're not going to say that there's a connection by halav. Once we're making that connection between dam and halav, so therefore by halav behema, I'm going to say it can only be metameh leratzon, because you don't see a shelo leratzon by its blood, because the blood of a halal of an animal is not metameh, is not makshir. So therefore we make the same correlation, just like blood by an animal is not metameh shelo leratzon, so too the halav of an animal is not going to be metameh shelo leratzon. So that's the rabbi's contention against Rabbi Akiva. Let's read that inside. Two lines from the bottom. Amru lo, im tameh halav alisha shelo l'ratzon. You know why we say that halav isha is tameh shelo l'ratzon? Shedam magafata tameh. Because the dam of her wound is also tameh. And the wound blood is obviously shelo l'ratzon. And dam and halav are related. Yitma halav behema. Do you want to say that the halav behema should be tameh shelo l'ratzon? Do you want to go and say that halav behema should be shelo l'ratzon? Shedam magafata tahor. by an animal, the dam that comes out is tahor. And therefore, we're going to say the same thing, that the milk that comes out of the animal, shelo l'ratzon, will also be tahor. So that's the Hachamim's contention. Amar lahen. So comes Rabbi Akiva and says, no. Rabbis, you're making a connection between the halav and the dam. Rabbi Akiva is going to say, no. Obviously there is no connection of halav and dam. Because if you made a connection, then they should be similar in all its laws. But Rabbi Akiva says, I'm going to show you that the law of halav is not similar to the law of dam. Once I show you they're not similar, so then already your connection is knocked out, and therefore I could say that, you know why the milk is metameh by a lady? Because it's considered a mashke. Milk is considered a mashke. Once I tell you milk is considered a mashke, it'll be metameh ben l'ratzon, ben shelo l'ratzon. Only when you compare it to blood, then you can make helukim, ratzon, yeah, not l'ratzon, no, just like blood. But if you take away that connection between halav and dam, now already you just say the reason why it's metameh is because it's considered a mashke. Finish, it's a mashke. Mashke is metameh ben ratzon ben shelo ratzon. Don't limit me with dam. Now where did the Rabbi Akiva see that dam and halav are not connected? So the Gemara says, Amar lehen mahmir ani bihalav mibidam. The Rabbi Akiva says, I'm more mahmir by milk than by blood. Which means you're right. By blood, there's a hiduk between ratzon and eror ratzon. But you know what? I don't compare milk to the blood. Why? She'acholev lirfu'ah tameh. What's the deen if you have an animal, and the animal is, let's say, sick, and you you milk the animal in order to alleviate its pain. So the deen is acholev lirfu'ah tameh. That milk that you took out of the animal for the fu'ah purposes has the ability to makshir. V'amekiz lirfu'ah tahor. However, if let's say you let blood from the animal for medicinal purposes, that blood does not have the ability to makshir. So you see, blood and halav obviously are not related. But if you're telling me blood and milk are related, so just like your cholev lirfu'ah, the deen is that the milk is tahor, does not, I'm sorry, the milk is tameh, so to mekiz lirfu'ah should be tameh. Rabbi Akiva says, you see that they're not related. And therefore, let's finish the thought. Once I show you they're not related, so to tell me now, you know what the reason why halav, let's say by an isha, you know why halav isha is metameh ben l'ratzon ben shelo l'ratzon? Because it's a mashke. Because we have a pasuk in Shofetim that she gave him to drink. Finish. And that's the ultimate reason. And therefore, by halav behema, also, it's considered a mashke. Nothing to do with dam. And therefore, it'll be metameh ben l'ratzon ben shelo l'ratzon. That's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Now the Gemara says, Amru lo. So the rabbis are going to come back and say, listen, really, the proof we're going to show you is that there is a clear difference between ratzon and shelo l'ratzon. Which means, even if you don't want to compare it to dam because of your questions, but we're going to show you that there has to be a difference between when the liquid comes out l'ratzon and when it comes out shelo l'ratzon. And where are they going to prove this from? And now we get closer to our question. Amru lo sale zetim va'anavim yochihu. The baskets of olives and grapes will prove it. What's the case? Shamashkim ayotzin mehen. The juice that oozes from the grapes and the olives on Shabbat, or for that matter, any time, l'ratzon teme'im. If it comes out willingly, the juice, meaning the oil and the wine, has the ability to makshir. Shelo leratzon teorim. So clearly you see from a case, a braita, you see clearly there's a difference between ratzon and eno ratzon. When you see, if it comes out willingly, it has the ability to be makshir. Mm. If it doesn't come out willingly, it doesn't have. So forget it, that is no connection to them. Clearly you just see that there is a hiluk in the deen of makshir between ratzon and eno ratzon. So Rabbi Akiva, we already have a precedence by Zetim and Anavim. Again, nothing to do with Shabbat. We're talking about Haksharana. The juice that comes out on a Tuesday. If it comes out and falls on a fruit, if the juice came out willingly, it's makshir. If it didn't come out willingly, it cannot be makshir. And therefore you see what? There is a chiluk between ratzon and eno ratzon. So comes the Gemara and says, now, what does ratzon mean and what does lo leratzon mean? Now let's define the terminology. So the Gemara says, my love, leratzon denihale. The ratzon obviously means that he wants it to come out. He wants the juice to ooze out. Shelo leratzon bistama. And shelo leratzon, I'm going to explain, means what? Stam. Meaning you didn't have a positive or negative intention. Meaning shelo leratzon means even if you were pav, even if you were setam. Meaning you didn't have any intention, that's considered shelo leratzon. Now what are we talking about over here? What type of fruits? Zetim and anabim. Now look at the Gemara's final way of asking the question. Uma zetim v'anabim. And what? You have olives and grapes. Right? These items, they're designated for the majority of people for squeezing. And still, what did you say? Shelo leratzon velo kelum. And you told me what? That stam, which means if a person has a stam kavana, these items don't have the ability to be metameh. And these items are definitely in mashkeh. But these items over here, they're made for squeezing. And still you're telling me stam kavana does not have the ability to makshir. Tutim v'rimonim. When it comes to berries and pomegranates, they love b'nesichitan, you know, that they're not designated for squeezing by the majority of people. Local chicken, so all the more so. Which means, Rabbi Yehuda, where you told us that by tutim v'rimonim, stam kavana, meaning you brought it in stam, what did you tell me? That we're going to say that that's considered leratzon. And therefore the juice that comes out of it on Shabbat is going to be asur. What are you talking about? Here we have a statement that says even zetim and anavim, when it comes out stam, it's considered shelo leratzon. And that's b'nei sechita. Kol sheken tutim v'rimonim, stam obviously is going to be considered also shelo leratzon, which means tutim v'anavim can't be better than tutim v'anavim. Zetim and, I should say, zetim and anavim cannot be better than tutim and rimonim. I repeat, if you're telling me here, by zetim v'anavim that are b'nei se'ita, what does b'nei se'ita mean? They're designated for squeezing. And still what are you telling me? But we're comparing hakshara to sechita. It's the same principles that are working here, ratzon and not ratzon. By hakshara, you're telling me that what? If it comes out shelo leratzon, it's not makshir. What does shelo leratzon mean? You're telling me stam. Oh, so you're telling me by olives and grapes, stam kavana is considered shelo leratzon and therefore cannot be makshir. So kol sheken, by tutim v'rimonim, stam kavana should not have the ability to make it a sur on Shabbat. You want to say to me that by tutim v'rimonim, stam is like, you want it, and therefore we're going to make a gizera on the juice that oozes from it. Kol sheken from the tim and anavim. So this is a direct hit, direct question on Rabbi Yehuda. Now, That's to assume if Rabbi Yehuda is the author of this statement. But if you say that Rabbi Yehuda is not the author of this statement, maybe we can answer the question. So that she comes out of his way and tells us, and it doesn't matter who the author of this statement is. Because let's say the author of this statement is the rabbis. Now we know that Rabbi Yehuda is definitely more lenient than the rabbis. So if the rabbis are telling you that Stam is considered Shelo Leratzon and they're lenient, so all the more so Rabbi Yehuda is going to be lenient. So therefore no matter who you learn made this statement, it's going to be a question against Rabbi Yehuda. If he made it himself, it's a direct hit. If the Banan said it, if the rabbis are lenient and telling you Stam is considered Shelo Leratzon, so Kol Shekin the Yehuda is going to say by Tutim V'Nimurim Stam should be Shelo Leratzon. So basically, to capsulize our question, Rabbi Yehuda, you said above by Tutim V'Nimurim on Shabbat. You brought them, asked the guy, what did you buy them for? Stam, I didn't really specify. And you still said what? The water, the juice that comes out of it, asur. What does that mean? That stam is considered like leratzon, as if it's, you have willingly that you want it for meshkim. And here we're telling you that l'inyan hakshara. It's a different subject, but same principles. By hakshara, if you have a basket of grapes and olives, and the juice came out stam, which is the way the Gemara is calling shelo leratzon, and still it's coming to say what? It does not have the ability to be mashir. Because stab is considered shelo leratzon. Now that's by grapes and olives, which has been a sahita. Kal vachomer by tutim v'rimonim, stab should be considered lo leratzon. Rabbi Yehuda, what are you saying? So the Gemara says, Gemara says like this, No, you explained the case of Bakshirim wrong. Leratzon bistama. Shelo leratzon degale adate be'amar lo nihali. The Gemara with one adjustment answers the question. By the case of Makshirim we said, it's in the basket. If it comes out leratzon, it's Makshir. Comes out shelo leratzon, it's not Makshir. We're going to redefine now what the word ratzon means and what lo leratzon means. Ratzon means stama. And lo leratzon means where the guy explicitly said, I don't want the Jews to come out. Oh no, that changes the whole dynamics now. Because if you're going to tell me that by zetim and anavim, what does ratzon mean? Ratzon means even stam. Stam equals ratzon by zetim and anavim. That's what we're talking about, zetim and anavim in a basket. And you tell me ratzon is what? Stam. Oh, very good. So once already you see that stam is considered la ratzon, so Rabbi Yehuda has no problem to say that also by tutim v'rimonim. Just like you said by zetim v'anavim, he'll also apply that logic to tutim v'rimonim, that what? Stamma is considered ratzon. Now, it says clearly over here, but by zetim v'anavim, if you had an explicit kavana, I don't want the stuff to come out, then already we say what? It does not have the ability to be makshir. Now, let's just crystallize a little. Everybody holds that when you buy zetim v'anavim, whether you buy it for mashkim, or whether you buy it for ochel, on Shabbat, the stuff that oozes out of it, off limits. Now, there's a difference between buying it for ochel, where your main purpose is for ochel, and the case where you have explicit kavana where you say, I don't want the stuff that comes out. So therefore, even though by zetim and hanavim everybody will hold that the juice that comes out is considered asur on Shabbat, that's a case where it's for maskin or ochli. But here we're learning, but if the guy has clearly a negative intent, that's even worse. I should say, that's better than ochli. Because all clean, you could change your mind. Here the guy clearly saying, I don't want the stuff that comes out. And therefore it will not be makshir. And it also will not be asur on Shabbat. But what do you see? You see that stama is considered ratzon. And therefore, just like you see by Zetim and Hanavim, that stama is considered leratzon, and therefore has the ability to metameh or makshir, so to Rabbi Yehuda will say that tutim and rimonim have the same thing, that stama is going to be makshir. So therefore we answered the question. Comes the Gemara and says, another answer to this question, alternate. Shani saleh zetim va'anavim kevan dil'ibud kaime ne'ikara afkure mafkire lehu. Which means, we're giving another answer over here. We're saying, go back to your original assumption. When the Braita here says, you have zetim and anavim in a basket, if it comes out liratzon, it's makshir. If it comes out shelo liratzon, it's not makshir. Go back to the way you explained ratzon and not ratzon. Ratzon, we're going to explain what is talking about, where you want it to come out. And shelo liratzon means stamma. Okay? Go back to the original way. But you know what? In this case over here, what's happening? The zetim and anavim are in a basket. What's happening to the juice that comes out? It's le'ibud, which means you're not saving this juice over here. This juice over here is getting lost. It's not like you're preserving it. The Gemara clearly says, kevan de le'ibud kaime. Yeah, it's le'ibud. Me'ikara afkure mafkir lehu. Which means, in your intent, originally in your mind, you mafkir this stuff. Which means already you gave up on it. Which means this stuff that comes out of it, it's out of your mind already. From the onset, you know, since you're not going to use it. And therefore, stama in that case will be okay. Stama will not be makshir. You know why? Because you don't care for these items. However, on Shabbat, where you want the juice, which means the juice is being saved, it's in a candy. There we could say stama is asud. Stama by makshirim is going not to be makshir in Hawaii, because me'ikara mafkar mafkar lehu. Because since it's going to be le'ibud anyway, you're not saving this juice, it's falling out of the basket. So therefore what? If the guy doesn't have a clear intent, I want the juice that's coming out, I willingly, stama is going to be no problem. You know why? Because anyway, the guy doesn't care about this juice over here, therefore it has not the ability to be makshir. Because it's a basket instead of dripping out. But on Shabbat, stama is going to be a problem. Why? Because you're saving the juice over here. And therefore, it could be niha. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda can be mahmir by Shabbat, even though he's lenient in this case over, because this case over is le'ibud. So therefore, there's more room to be lenient by a case where the juice just came out, stami had no intent, because the assumption is, imafkir it from the beginning, l'chpat lechan this, l'sheen came by Shabbat. So we have two answers to the stira against Rabbi Yehuda. Namzik Yamaran says, Askehan Rabbi Yehuda de model Rabbanan bezitim v'anabim. We found a braita in yesterday's daf that proved to us that Rabbi Yehuda agrees to the rabbis by zetim v'anavim. We actually had a braita. The braita said by zetim and anavim that everybody, including Rabbi Yehuda, holds that the juice that comes out of it, no matter what the reason why you bought it for, is always going to be asur. Now we saw that already. Now the question is, you told me that the rabbis agreed to the Biyuda Bashar Perot, meaning by all other fruit, they agree that to the Biyuda, that only if you bought it for Mashkin it's going to be a problem, but if you bought it for Achila, it's not a problem. Where do we know that the rabbis agree to the Biyuda? So the Gemara says, Detanya, we have a Braita, Sochatin, Defigain, ubefarishin, ubeuzradin. It is permissible on Shabbat to squeeze. Bigain is plums. She actually says prunes belaas. Ubefarishin, that's as she says quinces. ubi'uzra din. So those are, they call them sorb apples. It's a sour apple. All these items over here, the Braita says what? You are allowed to squeeze them on Shabbat. It's not considered dash. It's not considered threshing. What's the logic? The logic at this point is like this. Since these items, you don't normally squeeze them for their liquid. So therefore, what's inside is not considered a liquid. What's inside is considered an ochel. Now, it's like you're taking an ochel from an ochel. It's like you're taking a food from a food. When do we say that sechita is similar to dash? When you're taking one item from a different item. Meaning, when you're taking the kernel from the husk, so that would be similar taking the juice from the ochel, from the fruit. But here you're taking ochel from ochel. That's not similar to dash. Dash, you're taking one item from another item. Here it's all ochel. Why? Because it's not really used for mashkin. When do you say se'itaz asur? When the item is designated for mashkin. So when the mashkeh comes out, it's like you're taking out the wheat from the husk, let's say. Like dash. You're taking out one item from a different item. Here, it's all the same item. Since it's designated for eating, you don't really squeeze these items for their liquid, so the liquid that's inside doesn't have a din of mashkeh. It has a din of what? Ochel. So it's ochel me'ochel. Ochel me'ochel is not considered a todah dash. So that's why, what are the items? Prunes, or plums, quinces, the sorb apples, no problem. To squeeze them on Shabbat directly. Aval, lo b'rimonim. But clearly, what does it say? You're not allowed to squeeze on Shabbat rimonim pomegranates. And the Braita concludes, v'shildet menashya bar menachem, you should know, the family or the house of Menashia bar Menachem ayu sochatim b'rimonim. They used to squeeze during the week. They used to squeeze rimonim for the juice. So you see, rimonim are in a separate category. But what? Besides rimonim, everything else is okay. And what does that show you? That the rabbis agreed to the biyuda by other fruits. Which means, by the monim, they made an exception. But all other fruits, the rabbi said what? No problem. So therefore we're showing you that the rabbis agree to the biyuda by shar perot. Now right away you're going to ask a question, hold it. Our whole discussion until now was the juice that comes out of it. We never discussed actually squeezing fruit directly on Shabbat. Now we're going to a new level over here. Till now the whole mahlok we discussed is you're not squeezing anything. The question is the juice that came out by itself. What's the deen? Now already we're coming along with a new item in this bright. We're saying you can actually go and squeeze a figayin, perishin, uzadin. So the Gemara is going to start analyzing. The Gemara says, "Umimaydina banani." This Braita is nameless. Who told you that the author of this Braita is the rabbis? Dilma Rabbi Yehudai. Maybe the author of this Braita is Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore, all of Rabbi Yehuda is telling you in this Braita is what? That by other fruits, there is no problem of Sechita. But how do you know that the rabbis agreed to Rabbi Yehuda by other fruits, there are no problems? Which is, you said, how do you know the rabbis agreed to Rabbi Yehuda? We have a Braita. Who says the Braita is Hachamim? Maybe this Braita is going like Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, V'tehev enami Rabbi Yehuda. You know what? Even if you want to say it's Rabbi Yehuda, granted, it's Rabbi Yehuda. Imar deshamit Rabbi Yehuda yetzu me'atzman. Where did we learn Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda till now was only discussing where the juice comes out by itself. Sohatim nechatayla mishamit le. Did we ever hear Rabbi Yehuda discuss so far where you're allowed to squeeze the fruit on Shabbat directly? That was not the discussion till now. Ela mai itach lememar. So how are you going to explain this braita if it's allowing you to squeeze even fruit nechatayla? Kevan de la benesahitaninu. Since these items are not normally squeezed, and therefore we're going to say what? Afilu lechatayla. So we're going to say that it's even permissible lechatayla. Once already you're saying that there's a new level here. Where what? Where certain fruit that are not normally squeezed, so therefore you can even squeeze them directly on Shabbat, afilu temar banan. I could say the rabbis subscribe to the same opinion. That they'll hold the same concept. That what? Since these items are not b'nei sechita, it is permissible. Shma'mina rabbanani, shma'mina. So therefore we have a proof positive that what? That this could be the opinion of the hachamim. And what's the logic? The rabbis are going to tell you that by sh'ar perot, but by other fruit, not only are you allowed to use the liquid that comes out of it, but as a matter of fact, you're even allowed to squeeze it. So all the more so the juice that comes out of it. You know, till now we were only talking about the juice that comes out of it. For example, you have a plum. Like, till now we were discussing that plum, it's not tezetim v'anavim, it's not tutim v'rimonim, a plum is the sh'ar perot. Right? So he said, oh, everybody agrees. That what? That if you buy the plum for eating purposes, it's not a problem. Now we've been going further. We're saying, forget about buying it for eating purposes. Now, even if you take the plum itself on Shabbat and squeeze it, it's going to be mutar. You know why? Because since this item over here is not for squeezing, so the juice that comes out is not considered a mashkir, it's considered an ochel. And therefore you're taking ochel from ochel, and therefore it's not considered tzaita. So therefore we now expanded our horizons a little in tzaita, which is now we're giving rules. By zetim and anavim, asur. Certainly you can't squeeze them. And certainly the stuff that comes out of it on Shabbat also is going to be asur under all circumstances. Rimonim, the rabbis over here are telling you, no, rimonim are a problem. Meaning, the way we're learning now, it's a pomp to squeeze them. Because why? We found in the house of Menashe bar Menachem that they squeezed the rimonim during the week. So these items we saw now, they're, you know, people squeeze them. So the rimonim we're putting in a separate category. But everything else? Perishim, Ozadin, and the Pigayin, nobody can even squeeze them now on Shabbat. This is a expanded understanding of how we're learning. So the Gemara now says, Shelbet Menashe bar Menachem ayu so'atim b'rimonim. Right? The Bet Menashe used to squeeze the monim during the week. Amar Rav Nachman halakha kashel Bet Menashe bar Menachem. So Rav Nachman comes along and says, you know what? Halakha follows the house of Ben Menashe bar Menachem. Amar le Rav Nachman, so Rav tells Rav Nachman, Menashe ben Menachem Tanahu? What are you talking about? Halakha's like him. They became Tanaim now? These guys were a private family that used to squeeze during the week. They didn't have an opinion on anything. The halakha follows them. Did they have an opinion between you? You want to tell me halakha follows the Tana, Kama, Rabbanan? Tell me a name of a Tana. You don't tell me halakha is like some family that squeezed the pomegranates. So the Gemara says, V'chi tema. Maybe this is what he meant to say. Halakha ki hai Tana de savar la kishel Menashe ben Menachem. What he meant to say is, we follow the opinion of the Tana that was Mahmir, that you can't squeeze pomegranates on Shabbat because of the family of Menashe ben Menachem that did it. I mean, that's what he meant. Meaning we're going to take that stringent opinion like the Tana that says you can't squeeze pomegranates on Shabbat because he found that family. So the Gemara says, Umishum de savar ke Menashe ben Menachem halakha kemoto. Which means, just because he found one family, Menashe ben Menachem. So the halakha is going to follow him. Menashe ben Menachem have rubat alma. What are these guys the majority of the world? So you found one family. One family happens to squeeze pomegranates. So that already becomes halakha for rova olam. It doesn't make sense. Tell me, halakha follows tanakama that brought the story of Menashe ben Menachem. Big deal. So you found some minority group that squeezes pomegranates. That makes that rov ha'olam asur. They're not the rov, these guys. So the Gemara says, in. Yes, they are considered like the majority. The Gemara is going to go to show you can find even a small group But once you find a small group, that becomes binding to everybody. Where do you see this? So, we have a Mishnah on the laws of Kilayim. We know the laws of Kilayim. You have a vine, grape vine, right? So you're not allowed to crossbreed. Right? You're not allowed to have other plants next to the vine. So the rule is going to be, it's only talking about other plants that you're intending to keep there. But if, let's say, another plant grows and your intention is not to keep it there, on the contrary, you want to uproot it, so then already that's going to be an issue of kilayim. So the Gemara discusses. Ditan, ha-mekayim kotzim bekerim. Let's say you have a kerim, a vineyard, and all of a sudden thorns and thistles are starting to grow on their own. They're growing in the field. And you decide that, well, you know what? I'm leaving him there. So now the question is it considered kilayim or not? So it says, Abidi Ezer Omer Kadesh. Kadesh means it's considered kilayim, meaning you had a problem. Mm-hmm. He says, no, how can you say it's not an issue? What's the mahloket? Ela davar shekamo mekaymin. Hakamim come along and says, this one guy decides to leave his thorns in the field. Mm-hmm. Most people don't leave thorns in the field. And therefore, only items that normal people leave are going to be a problem, but this item, no. Oh, so what does Rabbi Eliezer say? The Amar of Hanina, my time at Rabbi Eliezer, Sheken be'aravya in Arabia, mekaymin kotzei sadot negmalehim. You have some guys in Arabia that want to feed their camels, so they leave the thorns in the field. So therefore the guys in Arabia ruin it for everybody else. But what do you see from over here? That it's possible you can have a minority group and they affect everybody else. So say the same thing by Bet Menashiah. Tanakhama said, you know why you can't squeeze pomegranates on Shabbat? Because you got one family. Because you got one family that makes it off? Yeah? You see the Israelites like that? Because you got some Arabs in Arabia that are keeping doors in their fields for their camels, it becomes kilayim for everybody. Because that's considered that they leave it there. So the Gemara says, Mide idiya. Come on. Is that a fair comparison? De Arabia atra. At least Arabia is a place. Which means there's a significant amount of people. At least you can say there's a city that keeps the thorns in the field. Mm-hmm. But here, it's one family. One family certainly is batel to the rest of the world. So the Gemara goes back to ask his question. What do you mean halakha follows Tanakama that found the family of Bet Menashiah ben Menahem? What do I care? Because you have one family that squeezes, that becomes the halakha, that's the derech to squeeze pomegranates, therefore it's going to be asur? So the Gemara says, okay. The reason is going to follow Rav Hizda's logic. New logic, what Menashiah, what that family did for us. It's Rav Hizda. The Amar Rav Hizda. We have a law of a mikveh. You know, in a mikveh you need 40 se'ah of rainwater. Now, we're going to learn another din. A mikveh also has to be the color of water. Water obviously is clear. But let's say you change the color of the mikveh. For example, you squeeze some red dye in the mikveh. Now it's red. It has the 40 se'ah of water. It's not lacking any. It just doesn't look like water. What's the deen? So the Gemara discusses it. Gemara says, Rav Hizda, teradin. You took beets, red beets, shesahatan. You squeeze them. V'natan b'mikveh. You squeeze them into a kosher mikveh that had 40 se'ah. It's not like you're using the beets to fill the shi'ud of the mikveh. The mikveh becomes pasul because the color changed. Now, which means we know, in order to posel a mikveh by changing its color, it only is pasul if the item that you poured in there is a mashkeh. It has to be considered a mashkeh, a beverage, a liquid. If you changed it by putting some type of brick in there that changed the color, it doesn't work. It has to be a meshkeh. Now, beets is not considered a mashkeh, the juice that comes out, because people don't squeeze beets for beet juice. And still you're telling me that if you squeeze beet juice into the mikveh is going to become pasul because it changed colors. Oh, but what do you mean it's not a mashkeh? Well, must be it is a mashkeh. What makes it a mashkeh? So the Gemara says, Elamai itlach lememar. What are you going to say? Kevan da'ashibinu havi leu mashkeh. Since this guy, when he squeezed it to him, he wants to make it a mashkeh, so he makes it a mashkeh, and therefore it's going to oser the mikveh. Which is even an individual can turn a non-mashkeh into a mashkeh, and therefore, hachanameh, here too, kevan da'ashibinu havileu mashkeh. And therefore we'll say what? That here too, once we find bet menashah, that one family, to them they squeeze it, so therefore you see what? To them it's considered a mashkeh. Oh, now let's go slow. Let's go slow. According to Rav Chisda, comes out like this. It's possible for an individual person to make a non-mashkeh a mashkeh. How? By wanting it, by designating it. Now, based on this interpretation, let's go back and learn the Braita according to Rav Chisda. If a guy is going to come on Shabbat and squeeze plums, according to Rav Chisda, I don't care if it's not normally squeezed or not. Bottom line, if you're squeezing it, his rule is, it should be asur. And you know what? According to Rav Chisda, that's true. But the Mishnah says you can squeeze them. And you know why we're talking about the Braita? You know what the Braita was talking about? Where you're not squeezing them for the juice. You're right. If you would squeeze them for the juice, even though they're normally squeezed by people, that's a use. You machshiv it. Asur. So what are you squeezing it for? These items are very sour. By squeezing them, you mimatek them. You sweeten them. Only in such a case, by when you're squeezing an item that's not normally squeezed by most people, and you're doing it not for the juice, you're doing it lematek, then we'll say what? It's okay. Oh, so why is rimonim asur? Rimonim, even if you're doing it lematek in order to make the rimonim a little sweeter, since we found bet menasheh, since we found a family that they squeeze the rimonim for the rimonim juice, so now we're going to make a gezerah by the rimonim. Not that they're the majority, but you just do see that there are people that do it for the juice. So, by prunes and all that other stuff, we haven't found anybody that does it. So there's no reason to make a gezerah limatek atu mashkeh. Mashe'enken by rimonim, we are going to make a gezerah asur to squeeze it limatek, lest you come do it for the mashkin. Who does it for mashkin? Bet menasheh. So that's the way we're going to answer this braita according to Rav Chisda. I repeat again. Rav Chisda came along and told us a deen not related. He talked about a deen of mikveh. And what he tells by mikveh, if you squeak beet juice into the mikveh, that's considered achshevinu. And therefore that beet juice is considered a mashkeh, and now we know a mashkeh has the ability to posel a mikveh if it changes the color. Beautiful. And therefore, once you're saying that, I can say the same thing by rimonim. Really, if I'm squeezing rimonim with the intention to mimatek the rimon, it shouldn't be a problem. Because I'm allowed to squeeze all this other fruit, mimatek. I would not be allowed to squeeze any fruit if I want it for the mashkeh, because once you want it for the mashkeh, you're machshiv it. I don't care what anybody else does. You're machshiv it, according to Rav Chisda. Once you machshiv it, it becomes a mashkeh. So what are you allowed to do in this braita? Lematek. But lematek limonim to sweeten, that's going to be asur. Why? Gezerah that you might come to do it for the mashkeh. Who does it for the mashkeh? Oh, we found people. I mean, once you found some people that do it, not that it's the rov. But already it's done. It shows you that it's a logical gezerah to make. We found already nobody squeezes plums for the juice. So we're not going to make a gezerah if you're doing it in the matek that you might come to do it for the Jews. You never found such a thing. If you found the family that did it, we don't say that also. But the money, we found the family. But it comes out of Kotel of Hezda. It's asur to squeeze even an item that's not normally squeezed if for you, you want the juice. That's the way he learns. Comes the Gemara and says, Rav Papa Amar. Rav Papa comes along and says, no. That's not the explanation by the mikveh. You want to tell me the whole logic of the mikveh is because when you squeeze the beets, you want the meshkeh. Now it becomes a meshkeh and only a colored meshkeh is supposed to be in the mikveh. That's not the pshat. What's the pshat? So he says, Rav Papa Amar, Mishum da'ave davar she'en osin memenu mikveh lechatahila. Different reason. Which items are posel a mikveh b'mar'eh? Doesn't have to be a meshkeh. Even if you want to say it's not a meshkeh. But any item that you can't make a mikveh out of is posel b'mar'eh. Therefore, I'll tell you, you know what, the beet juice, it's not a meshkeh. It's not considered a beverage, because people really don't squeeze beets. But bottom line, could you make a mikveh out of beet juice? No. So the rule is, any item, even if it's not a meshkeh, but if you can't use this item to make a mikveh, it's posel b'mar'eh. V'cho davar she'en osin memenu mikveh l'chetahila, posel et ha-mikveh b'shinui mar'eh. And therefore, let's just finish the thought. So according to Rav Papa, he has a different understanding over here. He comes along and says, by a guy squeezing something, it doesn't make it a meshkeh. That's not the pshat by the beets. When you squeeze the beets, that's the pshat, you wanted the juice now, therefore it's a meshkeh. No, it's not a meshkeh. And therefore, by the way, when you squeeze prunes, even though you want the meshkeh, it doesn't make it a meshkeh. And therefore, the bright above meant you could squeeze them directly for the meshkeh, because why? It's not considered a meshkeh, therefore it's ochel from ochel. Ochel from ochel. Oh, so why can't you squeeze rimonim? So you can't squeeze rimonim because we found already Bet Menashia that squeezed rimonim, and therefore there are people out there that do it for the juice. For the juice aspect of it, and therefore since you found it, albeit they're not the majority of people, but the rabbis are going to say it's asur nonetheless because it is done. That's the way Rav Papa is going to learn. Right, nothing to do with achshavinu. So it comes out, gentlemen, just to learn the law of mikveh. Comes out we have a fantastic machloket between Rav Chizda and Rav Papa. Somebody would ask you, why is shinui mar'eh posel mikveh? Rav Chizda is going to answer you, you know why? Because it's a meshkeh. Because only meshkim can be posel mikveh b'mar'eh. Oh, but Rabbi Hazda, beet juice is not a meshkeh. People don't squeeze beets. Yeah, but this guy did it. Ashevinu. Bingo. It becomes a meshkeh. Rav Papa is going to come along and say, no, it doesn't have to be a meshkeh. And you know what? Beet juice, I don't care if this guy's machshivit, it's still not considered a meshkeh. Also, Rav Papa, why is it posel mikveh? It's posel mikveh because we have a rule. Any item that can't be used to make a mikveh, it's posel mikveh b'mar'eh. Can you use beet juice to make a mikveh? No. Therefore, it's posel b'mar'eh. I don't care if it's not a meshkeh. It doesn't have to be a meshkeh to posel b'mar'eh. It's not a meshkeh. The barometer to judge is what? Is it kasher to make a mikveh? Now the Gemara is just going to show you that this indeed, this mahloket in mikveh, Tiraf Chazda and the Papa is actually a mahloket. Tanana tam. We have a Mishnah that says, Nafal letocho yayin o chometz umohal. The mikveh. Wine fell into the mikveh. Chometz is vinegar. Umohal. What is mohal? Mohal is the oil that comes out of olives. That she tells us there's three stages of mohal. The beginning stage, the middle stage, the end stage. The beginning stage is once you put the olives in the bucket or in the barrel, so it starts to ooze out some water. That's mohal stage one. When they sit in the barrel for a long time and they start to rest on each other in the heat, so now it starts to extract a little more. That's mohal stage two. Then you have the last stage is when you press the olives. After you finish pressing, when you have the sediments, so some oil oozes out, at that stage. So we don't know which stage we're talking about yet. But it clearly says in this Mishnah, whether you have wine, whether you have
vinegar,
whether you have moha, meaning the oil from the olives, it can posel a mikveh b'shinui mar'eh, if it changes the color. So the Gemara says, posel a mikveh b'shinui mar'eh. Right? V'shina mar'a pasud. Man tana de mohal mashkehu. Now the assumption is that the only thing that can posel a mikveh b'shinui mar'eh is a mashkeh. That's like who? Rav Chasda. Right? That's what we learned. It has to be a mashkeh. So we want to know. Yain we know is a mashkeh. That we don't need a proof for that. Vinegar also is a mashkeh. How do you know whose opinion is that moha is considered a mashkeh? Because you're telling me it's posel a mikveh b'mareh. Which opinion holds mohal is a mashkeh? So the Gemara says, Amar Abayir bi'akovi. We found a Tanna that says that. The Tanya, the bi'akov omir, mohal areu ke mashkeh. Bingo, he says it clearly. The mohal is considered a mashkeh. Now, umatam amru mohal ayotse betahilat tahor. Now, the mohal, the bi'akov's talking, that comes out in the beginning stage. That's right when you stick it in the barrel, so it starts to ooze a little. There, we're saying it's tahor. Meaning tahor for what? From being makshir. Olive oil is one of the seven liquids. If it falls on a fruit, it's makshirit, yeah? Mohal stage one cannot makshir. What are you talking? Rabbi Yaakov, you just told me it's a mashkeh. If it's a mashkeh, so mashkim are makshir. So he has to ask that question. So why did I tell you stage one mohal is not makshir? So he says the fish enro sebekiyumo. You're right, it's a mashkeh, but you know what? This guy doesn't. Nobody cares for the stage one mohal. Yeah, you throw it out. It's water. It's not oil. You want to call it a mashkeh, fine, but it's really nobody wants it, and therefore, since you don't care for it, it doesn't have the ability to be makshir. Good, good. Next thing, the bishimon omer. Mohal eno ke mashkeh. Rabbi Shimon said, no. Mohal is not a mashkeh. So if it's not a mashkeh, so therefore it doesn't have the ability to makshir. So the Gemara says, umatam amru mohal yotse mi'ikul betabat tameh. So how come you tell me stage three? That comes out of the ikul, meaning after you pressed it. You tell me that oil has the ability to makshir. Hey, Rabbi Shimon, you hold it's not a mashkeh. So how come stage three can be makshir? So he said, if he efshado belo sihsuch hashemet. Because in stage three, there's oil in there already. That stuff that's coming out of after you press, there has to be some traces of real olive oil. It's not just mohal anymore. It's not just, you know, water that's coming out of the olives. In stage three already, there's oil. That's considered... Oh, everybody agrees oil is considered a mashkeh. So let's review. Rabbi Yaakov holds mohal is a mashkeh. Once you say mohal is a mashkeh, it has the ability to be makshir. And therefore, if it falls into a mikveh and changes its color, since it's a mashkeh, it has the ability to posel the mikveh. Whereas Rabbi Shimon says, no, mohal is not a mashkeh. Okay? Now, everybody agrees. Let's analyze. Everybody agrees stage one, the mohal that comes out, tahor. Everybody agrees to that. Why? Either according to the Biyakov, because it's not a mashkeh. I'm sorry. It is a mashkeh, but in order to say b'kiyumo, whereas according to the Bishimon, it's not a mashkeh. Stage three, everybody agrees, it is tameh. Either because the Yaakov holds it's a mashkeh, or according to the Bishamon, there's oil in there. Mm-hmm. So where's the mahloket? So the mahloket is going to be in stage two. So the Gemara says, "My benayu, ika benayu de ata batar atzitzta. Atzitzta is stage two when they're crushing against each other, which means when they're in the barrel and they start to get." Tight, and they're resting and they're pressuring against each other, so that's when some oil also oozes out. That's where you have a machloket. Is it tahor or not? Which means Rabbi Yaakov's going to come along and tell you that what? When you have that second stage oil, which we're calling atzitzta, that she says, la harshit killet hamen, but if they start to warm up, the da'aku ze'etze, and they're pressuring, pushing each other, v'shteyaka, it says, akumar yamim, or maybe it means kama yamim, for a certain amount of days. So what's the machloket? Rabbi Yaakov is going to tell you it's considered a meshke. And if it's considered a meshke, it has the ability to be mashir. Whereas Rabbi Shimon is going to say, mo'al is not a meshke. And therefore, if it's not a meshke, it does not have the ability. Again, stage one, everybody says, tahor. Stage three, everybody says, tameh. Stage two, that's where you have the machloket. But what do you see? You see here, regarding our point, that the whole issue is, if it's considered a mashkeh, and now it falls into a mikveh and changes the color, it'll posel. So you see, what's the reason of shinui mar'eh in the mikveh? Because it's a mashkeh. That was like Rav Hizda. Now the Gemara concludes and says, Rav Amar no, mishum da'avi davar she'en osin hemenu mikveh, uposel ta mikveh b'shinui mar'eh. He comes along and says, no, no, no. You know why mohal is posel mikveh? You don't have to say it's a Yaakov. You don't have to say it's like a Yaakov that says it's a meshke. It can even be going according to the Bishamon that says it's not a meshke. And still it's going to be posel the mikveh. Why? Because you can't make a mikveh out of mohal. So therefore, comes out we have a mahluk and how to learn that mishnah. Why is mohal posel the mikveh b'shinui mar'eh? Either you have to say that Mishnah's dafka going like Rabbi Yaakov, that holds mohal is a meshke, and only meshkim posel mikveh b'shinui mar'eh, or according to Rabbi, you could say no. It can even be going according to the Bishamon. I bet it's not a meshke. It doesn't have to be a meshke to be posel the mikveh. So why is it posel the mikveh? Since you can't use mohal to make a mikveh, so automatically it is posel. So you see there is a mahloket in this concept, what the reason of Shinui Marena Mikveh is posel.